That's our rapid fire hot takes. Podcast is over.
Thanks. Bye. For
discuss amongst yourselves.
Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, an ephemeral podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. I'm Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marines.
And we are joined this time by no one because it's time for our annual review.
It's tradition.
Wait, it's tradition. He always waves at the gate.
It's tradition, so we have to come back and do the thing. We only uploaded two episodes in 2022, both of which were recorded in 2021. We did record two episodes in 2022. Where are those episodes? It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. One day, maybe.
No, wait. This is not the episode where we're going to make any promises.
That's true. Yeah. You're right. No, you're right. This, we're not making any promises here. Listen, this is our fun little check-in because this is a fun tradition for us. Mm-hmm. This is not a space for promises. I don't know, like, how, where, when to, like, get into this. I feel like we'll just start. I'm just going to start. I'm just going to, yes. Like, I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off to begin and say that. So my dad died in May of this year. The two episodes that we recorded were before that. And then we just stopped doing. I stopped being a person for a few months there. So I'm not sure how, when, or why that will continue to come up over the course of this episode. I'm sure that it will. So if, for whatever reason, hearing somebody talk about the death of a parent is not something that you are up to right now, it's the defining event of my 2022. So it is going to come up again. I stopped knowing how to be a person in May of this year, and I'm working my way back to it. And now, as part of it, we're doing this. We're having this little conversation where we talk about our 2022 in media.
It's so interesting to me, one, that we decided that this was a tradition, right? Because we just are like, oh, we should do this, what, the year that we started it, and it just became the thing that we did. But over the last couple of years, dating back to 2020, that we've done this, watching the progression of, you know, just like increasingly terrible circumstances, you know, globally, personally, and watching how that has affected both our media consumption and content creation has been super, super wild, right? Because over the last, every, you know, year in review over the last few years has started with this like very like, hey, so.
Lots of mercy.
It's us.
Remember me?
Is anyone out there? We know we're acknowledging that, but also it is what it is.
It is what it is. The thing that is funniest to me, and I'm sure we mentioned this on like last year, year before, but like when you go back to the beginning of this, the first year in review thing that we did followed a year in which we uploaded an episode every week. Like we were on our shit with the podcast, and like the podcast was the biggest driver of both of our media consumption. And so part of the point was we both had, you know, read, seen a handful of things that weren't part of the podcast. So it was sort of like catch up of a couple additional things there and then sort of summary of the podcast. Like that was a big part of what that first one was like summary of the podcast. And then kind of, so I think that was 2018 in review. And then 2019 in review had like a similar energy. We had both done maybe a few more things outside the scope of the podcast. But then you hit 2020 in review, 2021 interview, and now 2022, there's not really a lot of podcast to incorporate.
It's also like the interesting part about tracking that as well is that because we were doing like an episode a week, like, you know, on top of it, and that was the biggest driver of our media consumption, there was a moment there where, you know, I was having all of these big thoughts and feelings about like, okay, how do I consume media not for content? And, you know, like, the, you know, just like trying to figure out like just for me media, and then also laughing because we would do this year in review thing, making the just for me media content again.
For content,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so like the cycle of that. And so now looking, like sitting here and looking back, this is something that started in 2021, like where I barely track what I'm reading or consuming. Everything is just for me. There is no content.
Content media.
I still review books and stuff, but it, you know, the balance has shifted in such a way that I'm like, I remember when it was all content.
Yes, but you are still very, your like book talk really took off this year. This was a big, that was like a big event.
I today I was at church with my family, and like we were standing up to leave, and like a young girl from, you know, who goes to my church comes up to me, and I'm like, hey, you know, because I hadn't seen her in a while. She had left to college. So I was like saying hi to her, and she's like, listen, and like stops me before I even say hi, and she's like, I was just getting into book talk. And I was like, oh my god.
Oh no.
The immediate dread.
I'm at church, yeah, with my family.
The immediate dread. And she's like, I'm just getting back into reading, and so I'm getting into book talk, and guess who came up on my feed? And I was like, oh no. That has happened to me a couple times now, where like people just come across me. Wild. Absolutely wild.
Yeah. Yes. Really interesting too, like the comparison of book talk, like TikTok versus YouTube too, just like that. Having those kinds of anecdotes, yes, also is interesting for the comparison of, you know, the years that you spent on YouTube versus, yeah, the relatively short time that you've been on TikTok.
Right. I was on YouTube for years, and like literally nobody just came across me. Like you had, right. I don't know, there was such a, like BookTube being such an insular thing, you know, whereas like TikTok, like even if you think about books one time, the TikTok algorithm might put it on your feed. So there's such like discoverability there, yeah, that it is very wild to just feel like, I don't know, my content could reach so many more people, and it has reached so many more people. So yes, truly wild.
It also means though that the spaces are just more inherently dispersed and less, and there's less of a clearly defined community, like, mm-hmm, like you can't, like that is very much an either or, like either you have more discoverability or you have more community, like you actually can't have both of those two things. Yes. Which is interesting, like thinking about like this thing that we're doing here being born out of like blogging days.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So like to, I don't know, to sort of chart the journey that we took from the blog, which was very, I don't know, I guess it's not that there's like a lack of discoverability, but like opting into participating in the community, there's this, I don't know, a real like act of entering into a thing, mm-hmm, to be like, to have found our blog on Google, however, probably searching something related to 50 Shades of Grey.
True. Or Buffy.
Or Buffy. One of those two things is how most people found us. But like to then like jump into the comment section there and like become an active participant in that like very clear community space, the boundaries of the space are explicit, whereas like as you move onto these platforms, like we don't own YouTube or TikTok or whatever, like
right
you're existing within this larger ecosystem, versus the thing that this originally was an ecosystem of our own, like, mm-hmm, we created our own ecosystem, yeah, to operate on, which, yeah, I don't know, this is a wild tangent. I didn't intend to go down this rabbit hole to start, but
here we are.
Okay, so we should get started with our hottest takes first. Okay. Just really lay it out there, and we'll do, we usually do kind of a breakdown of like the books that we've read in a year, the movies that we've watched in a year, the TV shows that we've watched, in sort of like a miscellaneous category of like, I don't know, podcasts or games or whatever else might come up. Let's go, I guess, in the order I just said, books, movies, TV shows, best and worst. Only pick one.
The best book that I read in 2022, The Beautiful Ones by Silvia Moreno Garcia. And the worst was The Awakening by Caroline Peckham and Suzanne Valenti.
Best book that I read in 2022 was The Space Between Worlds by Micaiah Johnson.
I love that book so much.
It's very good. I think it might be the first book that I read after my dad died. It was like one of the first. So, you know, there's a layer of it. Like I remember I was reading it on airplanes. So there's a lot of like situational stuff that is attached to my sense of the book that can never pick that apart. But fucking loved that book. The worst book that I read this year was The Book of Joan by Melissa Rivers. a memoir about her dead mother. I read it before my dad died, mm-hmm. for whatever that's worth. I don't know if my feelings would be different if I went back, but I'll have more to say at a later time. Rapid fire, I said. Movies. Best and worst movie of 2022.
I didn't watch a ton of movies, and all of the movies that I watched were like things that I was super interested in. So I don't know that I have a worst. We rewatched, or I rewatched with you, and you watched it for the first time, The Eternals. And that is not super commentary on The Eternals, because there's really nothing else.
It's more commentary on your year. I think I talked about this in our 2021 podcast with my books, that I was also I just had liked every book I read. So I was like, I don't know.
Best, I'm going to go Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That is same. Best movie of the year, hands down. Everything Everywhere. I was making a list of movies that I had seen. Like, I was looking at 2021 movie releases and I was like typing them. And then when I got to that one, it's in all caps on my list. Like, I was typing. And I was like, yeah! Best movie of 2022, hands down. In fairness, this list is missing Eternals because I had forgotten it. However, I am going to edge it out. I think the worst movie that I saw in 2022 was Bros. Hmm. TV shows. Best and worst TV shows you watched in 2022.
Okay. I don't really have a worst again, but I'm going to give it to the one episode of The Rehearsal that we watched.
Okay.
For how uncomfortable that made me the entire time. That was like I'm cringing right now just talking about it, honestly. So I didn't even finish it, and I never would. So that has to go to worse. And the best, I'm going to give to A League of Their Own.
I am was sort of a toss-up. Because you said A League of Their Own, I'm going to say my other one as my best one. Okay. Just acknowledging. But Reboot on Hulu, absolutely delightful. Cannot recommend it enough. And my worst show of the year, I stopped watching. I was going to say, it's DNF. I feel like DNF I associate with books. So yes. I'm like, it feels wrong. I DNF'd so many TV shows this year, actually. Mm-hmm. I started so many things. Pam and Tommy. I watched the first like 2-3 episodes, and I had been seeing a lot of stuff about how Pamela Anderson had not wanted the show to exist. And I got to maybe the third or fourth episode. It's like after, like, the show begins before the tapes, like, and the sort of like setup, but you get to sort of the immediate aftermath of that and how like traumatizing this is for her. Mm-hmm. There's no way to watch that and not know that, like, that you are depicting a real woman who is alive and who fucking hates that you're doing this to her. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just, it made me, like, sick. So yes. I had to stop watching it. Okay, having dispensed with our hottest of takes, how was your reading year overall?
Okay, so I did not watch a lot of TV and movies. And I said that last year. So again, this is like continuing the trend. Like, listening back to the 2021 episode, I was just like, oh my God, this year was that, but like everything was heightened in a way that I like didn't really remember that this had been a trend for so long. So typically in a year, I read anywhere from 72 to 100 books a year. And like reaching 100 books, like for these past couple of years, was like my stretch goal. In 2022, I read 244 books.
Insane.
And here's the thing.
Wait, I read 57 books, which means that you read 4.2 times. You did my reading year 4 times over.
Yes. So I didn't track a lot of this, which was, you know, again, not really par for my course. Looking back, like, I sat down at the end of the year to like kind of try and put it all together of like, what was my reading year? 140 something of those books are like books I actually consumed, thought about, reviewed maybe, or anything. And the remaining, let's say, I think was something like 85. My math was wrong there, but it really was 85, were Kindle Unlimited romances that I was just binging. And I could not tell you a title, an author, what I read. And I'm not even going to say like it was brain off reading, because I was reading them and I was like, this is terrible. But I kept reading them. That was my stress reading. That was one part of it, like 85 books on Kindle Unlimited. continuing on from last year, I had mentioned my Copaganda that I was reading through the In-Depth series, and I had read, I think, 20-something books already at that point, so I finished the other 30-whatever to catch up to the series real time, and then I also went back and reread the ones, like, at the beginning, so I essentially read all 54 books in the In-Depth series this year. So 54 in that series, 85 Kindle Unlimited romances. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. There's also like another 10 from another one of your go-to
series. Yes, Kate Daniels. I like read and reread a lot. I reread the like first 6 that I had read before in this year, and then I finished the other 4. So lots of comfort rereading, lots of just like stressy brain can only handle this sort of reading, but a lot of it just by a volume. Lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a crazy year.
Because it's even if you subtract all of that, there's still 100 books. Like, even if you take away yes. the Kindle Unlimited and the Kate Daniels and the Mercy Thompson, you still have 100 books.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, yeah. So, by volume, a ton. By quality, meh.
I obviously did not read 244 books. Mm-hmm. I read 57 books. My reading year got off to a really strong start. I was looking at the books that I read, and apparently I had just stellar May reading month up until my dad died. I read so many books, and I was looking at them and I was like, I don't remember, like, what is any of this? What are any of the things on this list? They are all like null to me. Even one of my, I made a list of all the books that I gave 5 stars to, one of which was Yoke by Mary H.K. Choi. I don't remember that at all. Like, I think it's about sisters, maybe. I don't know.
I was going to ask you to tell me about it because I was interested in it, but I guess not.
I gave it 5 stars. I read it like a week before my dad died. So absolutely deleted from my brain. Actually, looking at the list of books that I read in May, the one that, like, the only one that I was like, ah, yes, that book I remember was Before the Coffee Gets Cold, which I only gave 3 stars to, but actually is one that I'm like, I would be fascinated to reread that book now. Just because of everything that book is doing.
Yep.
Just really interesting timing that I chose for the moment. Like, that's one of those things where I could see a world in which I read that book like 2 weeks later and had like just a radically, radically different experience. For context, Before the Coffee Gets Cold is cozy sci-fi. Mm-hmm. It takes place in a coffee shop. There's time travel, but only if you are sitting at this one table at this one coffee shop, and you can only travel back to that place. Like, you can travel back to that coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And you need to make sure that you leave, that you like bring yourself back to the present before the coffee gets cold. Otherwise, you get stuck and you become like the ghost. There's an existing ghost of the coffee shop. And theoretically, if you fail to come back before the coffee gets cold, you would become the new ghost of the coffee shop. And yeah, it's like, it's such an interesting premise that I only gave it 3 stars, and I remember why I only gave it 3 stars. Like, I think that that's fair, but also it has definitely stuck with me more than 3 stars would suggest, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, I think that the premise is really interesting, and there's a lot that the book was doing atmospherically. Mm-hmm. There is much to be said about the context in which media finds us.
Yes.
Like, a writer or a filmmaker or whoever, whatever kind of storyteller, is bringing something to us, but we are also bringing ourselves into that. Like, there is a level of sort of conversation happening there. And thinking about the fact that I read that book on like May 15th or whatever of this year is really just like peak peak example, because what would my thoughts have been had I read it just like 2 weeks later?
Yeah. I read that this year as well. I believe it was this year. And I think I also gave it like 3 or 3.5 stars. But it is a little grief book, right? So, yes. Had the timing there been different, it would have definitely caught you in a different space.
The other thing that I did reading-wise this year, also in the spring, in the, you know, the before half, I never finished it, but I was doing this project where I was doing a sewing and reading vlog at the same time. There's like an official dress pattern from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And so I was making that dress. I got pretty far along in the dress, but I never finished it. I was making that dress, and also reading books about women in comedy. So, and I read, I don't know, probably about a dozen. Most of them were memoirs. Both of my one-star reads for the year were from that project. So the one that I need, my worst book of the year was The Book of Joan by Melissa Rivers. And then the other one that I had, my other one-star was The Girl in the Show by Anna Fields, which was one of mine and DeBokey's nonfiction book club books. It's doing the thing that I was trying to do. Like, I was excited about it because it's like charting women in comedy, like the idea of being the girl in the show. Like, that's what the title is referring to. And so it is like charting women in sitcoms, but doing it through just like the most reductive lens imaginable. This is the thing that stands out to me most really early on in the book. She's talking about Lucille Ball, so focused on the idea of her, well, you know, in order to like have her show, she like still had to be the wife and homemaker and like, and which that is all true. But that show, she was the show. Like, she was this was the thing that was pissing me off, because she was talking about the idea of like the straight man versus the comedian. Like, Lucille Ball was the comedian. Like, yeah. Ricky sometimes got jokes, but like most of the jokes were usually hers. Like, everyone around her was the straight man to her making jokes. She was the center of the show. Whatever. Anyway, I'm like now going off on this whole fucking rant about Lucille Ball.
Fresh.
it still makes me so mad. One of the, I read her memoir. Also, before my dad passed, also on my list of things that I'd be interested to reread, because the audiobook is narrated by her daughter, and her daughter also has an intro, has like a preface, made me cry. Lucille Ball's memoir was itself like fascinating. There's lots of really great stuff there, but the introduction by her daughter was also really interesting, because she talks a lot about grieving your parents, but your parents also belonging to other people. So like this memoir was originally supposed to be published, like she was working on it for years and then sort of abandoned it because she didn't feel comfortable being super honest about people in her life who were still alive. Like she just like didn't want to do that, didn't want to deal with it. And all of these audio recordings got sort of set aside. And then years later, as the kids were effectively turning their parents' legacy into a business and like having to run a business around their deceased parents, and just like all of that, uncovering, like they just like found these recordings of what was meant to be this memoir. And she's like, well, you know, I guess we'll like publish it, whatever. But like, I don't know, the very unique and interesting experience of processing that loss when your parents are also like a symbol like that. Like, on the one hand, this is mom, but on the other hand, she's like a cultural icon. You know, I don't know. That was not on my list of 5-star reads, but I would highly recommend it for the introduction alone.
Speaking of projects, right? Like, you did that project reading. Well, first I wanted to ask, do you think you'll ever go and finish that video? Not that we're making promises, but...
Yeah. I'm for sure not making any promises. I think I will, just because I recorded so much. And I found a book that was like everything I wanted the girl in the show to be. I didn't finish it. I was pretty far through it, but like, you know, just had to walk away from the whole thing. But that book would have been a perfect sort of capstone to the project. Just all of the memoirs that I read. And then I had kind of these two like bigger picture like books into which to like to sort of contextualize all of the memoirs that I was reading. The project was really interesting overall, particularly because I read a bunch of comedian memoirs back to back to back. So I started to pick up on patterns, like things made them work for me, didn't make them work for me. So like as a reading vlog, there's a lot there. Whether or not I will actually finish the project is complicated, because I know for a fact that some of my video, you can hear my dad in the background. So the if when I return to all of that is like a truly could go either way.
Yeah.
I guess I could also just talk about the books. I could, you know, come back and just talk about the books. But I recorded so like I would have to remember the books. I don't know that I could remember the books without watching the footage, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Thinking about like project reading and things that I did for projects. I was listening back to our 2021 year in review, and I made a very bold statement about how I was no longer going to let TikTok recommend me books.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, I take bad books being popular as almost a challenge. Like, I'm like, no, I'm going to read it and I'm going to tell you why that is bad. So I did some of that this year. I did some of, like, just genuinely being like, I'm curious. Like, everybody loves this. Like, I would like to read that. I did a few, like, filters, letting filters pick my books sort of thing. So a big chunk of what I did not like this year that I read was from Book Talk. And the thing is, I hate when people say things about Book Talk, like, oh, they just recommend the same book, or like Book Talk's taste is like terrible, and like treating Book Talk as a monolith. That's not the way that this works. You have to curate your feed. There's a ton of really excellent stuff happening on Book Talk. However, at the same time, the stuff that you get when you just enter the community, like that top line stuff, is like truly horrific.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that my least favorite book that I read was The Awakening by Caroline Peckham and Suzanne Valenti. It's like fantasy romance, supposed to be. It's fantasy romance. Uh-huh. It is also bully romance. So bully romance is exactly that. The bullies turn into the romantic interest. So it's like enemies to lovers, but worse because there's active bullying in it.
Enemies to lovers, I think of as more often than not, this isn't like an inherent requirement of the genre, but a staple of the genre is that they are enemies for reasons that are larger, for like social reasons. There are like larger societal reasons, but bully, mm-hmm. if you're a, like, that's not, that's just like one person is a bad person.
Yes. I mean, and the whole thing with bullying, I was just doing my anti-harassment and anti-bullying training at work. And the whole thing with bullying is that it is personal to you. It is you as a person that does something to the terrible person that caught, like, that, and not causes, but that, like, that is what the bullying comes from. Whereas, like, harassment is some other, like, protected category because you are Black. Whereas bullying is because you are you. Yeah. So, like, the entire concept of, you know, bullies to lovers is, like, not for me in a way.
Yeah.
You would think that bully romances, it would be an arc, right? Your bully is like, oh, no. You know, oops, I'm sorry I bullied you. I actually you.
I would like to be a better person.
I would like to be a better person. I've changed. We're catching feelings. We're falling in love. But all of the bully romances that I have read are not like that. The woman falls in love with her abuser, right? And she's like, yes, he's bullying me, but he's so hot, right?
No!
they skip these middle steps of, like, you know, change and arc. And so there's, like, a larger thing here, I think, why these sorts of stories are successful, especially mm-hmm. with young women who, are, like, are seeing their abusers in romantic lights or whatnot. So there's, like, a lot there. This book is, like, super popular on Book Talk. It is now...
Wait, what is the book?
The Awakening, my worst of the year. Super popular on TikTok. It's got 8 in the series, and it's, like, still ongoing. They're self-published, and, you know, if you told me that this book was edited, I would call you a big fat liar to your face. In the whole first book, right, we follow 2 twins. They are living in Chicago. They turn 18, and the second that they turn 18, somebody comes in there and is like, no, you're actually Fae, and you're, like, the long-lost Fae princesses, so we've got to take you back to the Fae realm. They are forced to go. They're, like, basically kidnapped and taken to the Fae realm.
Okay.
They get enrolled in magical Fae college because they're 18, but this college has a principal and also detention.
Okay. Okay.
So you're already getting the vibes that this is, no, this is high school, but fine. You want these characters to bone, so you've made them 18 and in college. And then, so, you know, they get there and there's 5 families who are in power because the princesses were lost. And the heirs to those families are really threatened by these 2 girls that have arrived to seemingly, you know, take their power back. So they start bullying the girls. And I'm not just talking about, like, a sign on the back, gum in the hair. We're talking about lighting them on fire, trying to drown them, almost like knocking them off a cliff. They never really like kill them. I don't know why they don't just kill them and move on. No. We're like being bullied for hundreds and hundreds of pages. The number of ways that like consent was violated in this was like almost impressive. How many different ways like consent was violated. And then on top of that, it had the audacity just to be a stupid story. None of them like, made sense. None of the world building made sense. Now it was like Zodiac based, but also it had werewolves and shapeshifters and vampires. And also it had like fire magic and water magic and elemental magic. And it just like had all of this stuff and none of it made sense. And it was like 400 pages of these girls just, I literally had a notes app, like just listing all the ways that they were being bullied. So I review it and I've got all of the fans in my comments saying, no, it gets really good in book 4 or 5.
No. No. They got bullied by the book.
Yes.
They got bullied by the series because they just kept letting the book beat them up and then they read another one.
Yes.
It just kept going.
I'm convinced it is like the reading equivalent of Stockholm Syndrome, where it's like at a certain point, it's like you've sunk enough cost in it.
Yes.
I don't know. Your brain is protecting itself and trying to convince you that no, actually you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Somebody who actually enjoys this is going to be like, F you. But honestly.
I said what I said.
Yeah. So I read some Colleen Hoover this year. Also really terrible. And also, this is a media experience that just I had, but you kind of had by proxy because I was at your house while this was happening and I was like ranting and raving about this. But
yes.
I made a video about like there was this whole rumor going around on BookTok that somebody who like made a BookTok that like blew up and got a publishing deal because of it was an industry plant. Because it came out that she was like super well connected in the industry and she comes from like a really rich family. So people were like, especially because the way that she had sort of posited the whole thing was like almost a little rags to riches-y, right? Like I've been struggling and I finally got a deal and all of this stuff. And then people were like,
struggling since I was 13 or whatever.
Right, to write this book and I finally got published. And then people were like, wait, you've already published 2 other books and this is your third published.
And she's like 25.
You're 25. And also struggling where? Is this your dad who owns the largest car dealership in the United States? And so people were like kind of questioning her marketing tactics.
Yeah.
So I just did a video about it, basically summarizing what the discourse was about. And then I talked a little bit about like privilege in publishing to make art. And that blew up, not only in numbers, but like people coming for me to defend her. So I was like processing this real time, just getting all of this hate in my comments while at Nicole's house.
Yes.
So we would literally meet in the kitchen for like water breaks. And I would be like, and another thing.
Yeah,
I did eventually read her book because, you know, gotta commit to the bit. And it was one of the worst things that I read. Just truly unhinged in its ability to pull all of these different elements of a story together, but not actually make a cohesive story. It was just like kind of spaghetti against the wall. And some of the worst representation of Latinas I have ever seen in my life. Coming from a fellow Latina. So truly a miserable reading experience, made worse by the fact that people were coming for me to defend that book.
Right. Yeah, you're like, well, the thing that's like so wild about it too is that none of your criticisms were that harsh. Like I guess your criticisms of the book were, but like this didn't start about that. Like it started about basically just saying like, be transparent about the opportunities afforded you. And also just like all of the stuff with you and Alex Astor on TikTok sort of blew up a couple months ahead of the Nepo Baby article or whatever.
Yes.
Which, you know, not entirely fair to describe her as a Nepo Baby per se, but like even the Nepo Baby article, like there's a criticism of that, which is that it has quickly become one of those terms that has lost all meaning because of the ways in which people sort of toss it around.
Mm-hmm.
The larger point is that some people are starting at a different starting line.
Yes.
Some people just have a different starting line. All that is being asked is that you be straight about that.
Yep.
Like just That's it. Yeah. That's the situation. And it's like, and none of this conversation would be happening if she hadn't gone out of her way to frame herself as the product of some great struggle. Whether or not she should have any of these opportunities, like, I don't know, like, she didn't choose her rich parents either, I guess, like, whatever. Fine, like, do what you're gonna do with that, by all means, take full advantage of it. I mean, in terms of, like, the Hollywood nepo babies, like, the ones that are upsetting, quite frankly, are the ones who are, like, bad at it. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. The Alex Astor thing was just so wild, because it was like, this isn't saying anything about you as a person, except the fact that you're getting so entrenched in this idea, like, doubling down on the narrative of your struggle.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. And I mean, even the larger conversation acknowledge this, like, be transparent, but also this whole thing about how much easier it is to create art in certain circumstances, like when your basic needs are met.
Right.
And thinking about that, just even in, like, our content creation, which is very super small scale, but to kind of debunk the starving artist sort of thing, or like the struggling artist, like, creates the best art. No. The best art is made when your basic needs are met and you've got, like, good mental health or whatnot. And the whole Alex Astor thing is like, yes, my partner, you know, paid for my healthcare, and yes, my parents paid for my rent, but they didn't help me at all to publish this book. And I'm like, you're not getting it.
You missed the point. The point is that you had the financial comfort to make this your full-time job, you had no concern. You could dedicate all of your time to this project.
And then your book is bad?
Before we wrap up our little book section, I also want to do, like, a quick little shout out to my, like, best nonfiction. So my five-star nonfiction reads were Somebody's Daughter by Ashley Ford, yep, Culture Warlords by Talia Lavin, and Jesus and John Wayne by Kristen Gomez-Dumez. Mm-hmm. While all three of my five stars, like, I stand by those five stars, they were all great, my number one nonfiction book of the year was Jesus and John Wayne, How White Evangelicals Corrupted a Faith and Fractured a Nation. I just think that, like, the broader sociopolitical context that she's giving around, like, the cultural evangelical right is so, so interesting. And it is, like, I don't know, I read it in March or April, like, remembering that I talked to my dad about it. Yeah. So sometime in the spring, and I think about it all the time, like, it's like something will happen and I'm like, this reminds me of such and such thing from that book. So Jesus and John Wayne is my number one nonfiction read of the year.
I read a handful of nonfiction this year. It wasn't a super great nonfiction year for me, but talking about, like, the things that we bring to media and also, like, sort of the context that we read it in, I read No Visible Bruises by Rachel Louise Snyder this year, and it is about domestic violence. And I read it as the Johnny Depp trial and Amber Heard trial was kind of happening. So it was, like, sort of in tandem, not even really purposefully thinking about this, because also that went on for so long, not only the trial, but just sort of the conversation about it.
Talking about it, yeah.
And I wasn't watching the trial at all, because I was like, absolutely not. But it was the discourse around it, and sort of, like, even it felt very like back in the early days of Trump, where, like, people were, that you knew that you were close to, were falling on one side or the other in a way that, like, opened your eyes to maybe, like,
yes,
who the people in your family were, and, like, the people. And I felt that way about, like, how people were talking about this trial in a way that I was like, this is, like, concerning to me. Like,
I learned something about you that I don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
I hate that I know this about you.
And I can never delete this information now. So that was happening on the one hand. And then I was reading this book about domestic violence that I think was a very, like, very good book of it, in and of itself. It's got, like, a good blend of sort of, like, journalism, because she is a journalist, but she introduces a lot of, like, narrative nonfiction as well. She's telling stories of the people that she has met and what they have experienced. So, like, huge trigger warnings for domestic violence and just, like, violence in general against women. But if you can, I think that it is some of the most, like, nuanced and just interesting sort of discussion about how prevalent this is and the way that we view victims and abusers in society. So highly, highly recommend.
Well, on that I have no good transition away from that into the movies that we watched in 2022.
It's just time for movies. That's it.
What a transition.
I'm looking at my list of movies, and I think most, if not all of these, I actually watched with you.
That's amazing. I watched, I'm sure, more movies than you, as that is true of every year that we do this podcast. Yes. The back half of the year, I spent just so much time with my mom, and my parents were, my mom still has, the AMC Stubbs membership. Their first apartment in DC, like when they first moved there, the building was like right next to an AMC. And they moved like in the heart of the pandemic, like they moved in like late early summer 2020. And so like the movie theater opened, but like nobody ever went to the movies. It was just my parents going to the movies every week. They went to get their AMC stubs. And I've also talked about this in previous versions of this podcast, that like my family is big on like holidays, like Thanksgiving, Christmas. That's like a thing we do, is we go to the movies. We all get together as a family, we go to the movies. So anyway, being that I'm fully remote, I just spent a lot more time with my mom. I went to so many movies with my mom this year as a result of that. I ended up seeing Thor twice because I went to see it with my mom, and then you came here and you hadn't seen it. So had to add that to my list. Two of the highlight movies of the year were both movies that I saw with my mom in the theater. So Everything Everywhere All at Once, and then also Black Panther. That was a ton. really fantastic movie. I was like the thing where like you're sobbing and you're trying not to, you want to be quiet, like you where your body is like loud, needs to be loud sobbing, and you're like, I need to make this be quiet. So like a solid chunk of my experience with the movie was like spent thinking about myself, right? Like thinking, you have to be quiet, you have to be quiet, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
So I would love to watch the movie again at home.
Because I feel like you still sob.
yeah. I'll still sob, but I think that movie was maybe a little bit too intense to watch in a movie theater. And it was like packed. We went second week, and it was still like an absolutely packed theater. I think it was a great movie, but it was maybe not a great movie to watch in a packed movie theater.
You had warned me about this, and like you watched it first, and a lot of my movie going experience again in 2022 following the trend was MCU. So I actually went to watch Wakanda Forever, and like I thought I was steeled. You were like, I like sobbed, and then so it's like, I'm ready.
I was like, before there's an actual frame, because we hear, yes, it's like black frame, yes, talking is how the movie begins. Like the crying starts before any visual element appears.
Yes. So I felt like I was steeled, but I also, in trying to prepare myself, like prepared myself for one kind of way that this might be sad, and that was, you know, Chadwick Boseman. So I was like, okay, this is why this is going to be sad. And I was not prepared for the ways that the actual movie, like the plot, yeah, was going to make me sad. And I was not ready. I was not ready. And so like the first, you know, the talking happened, and I'm already like texting Nicole like, oh yeah, so sad, I'm like crying. And then the movie happened, and I was like
yeah, especially because the way that opening scene happens, it would be plausible for that to be, okay, we are explaining him away, and now we will proceed with whatever the movie was going to be. But no. The movie said, Shuri is grieving, and that's it. Yes. That's the movie.
And not only is Shuri grieving, but also, like, bad things will continue to happen. Losses will continue to happen.
We are not going to, there's no out for Shuri grieving. No. Shuri's going to keep grieving. Yes.
I was not ready.
The hits will not stop coming.
I was not ready. I was not ready. Even though you warned me, I appreciate the warning, was not ready. One of the like surprise standouts, probably, you know, in my top five of movies, we'll say, which is a spoiler for the Lost episode that we have not actually published, but The Batman this year was surprisingly good. I was prepared not to enjoy that at all, and I enjoyed it a heck ton, actually.
Yes.
So that was a fun experience, especially because our struggles with the DCEU are really well documented yes. on this podcast. So to have a win was a delight in this year.
And like expectations truly on the floor, mm-hmm. which may be part of it, I guess, but yes. that movie did something very, very smart,
yes.
which was to, instead of like focusing on being a Batman origin story, it functions mostly as a Bruce Wayne origin story.
Yes.
Again, in like, there's a lot of like grief elements to this, but like it starts with him doing like Batman vigilante shit and just like not, I feel like we have seen on film so much of the billionaire socialite Bruce Wayne, like that version of him has been portrayed. That is not this Bruce, that Mm-mm. Bruce Wayne is not in this movie. Mm-mm. This is like the prequel to that Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
Is him going and doing his vigilante shit and then people being like, hey, you know what would be super useful? Is your money. And him being like, oh.
Philanthropy.
I think that's just great.
Yes.
Another thing that I appreciated about it is that they portrayed his involvement in the creation of like Batman shit in a way that I bought. This is something that I've complained about a bunch in both our like DC and MCU stuff, is that whatever my issues with Tony Stark as a character are, I believe that the MCU's Tony Stark is a genius. Like, I believe that this guy is very, very brilliant. I believe that he invented an element or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, like he's a douchebag. There's a lot going on there. But like, the movies set that idea up in a way that feels plausible.
Yes.
I have never seen a Bruce Wayne on screen that makes me believe that man is inventing a single fucking thing.
Yeah.
And this, like, this gave a good dynamic with him and Alfred, and it gave some context where I was like, yep, some of it is like him being smart, but some of it is like there's enough like pieces there where I was like, I get it and I believe it.
Yes.
I believe this.
I don't know which DCU movie. I think it's like a, not an Avengers, what are they called? The Justice League one, where at some point we see Ben Affleck working on a plane.
Yes.
He's like working on a plane. And that, in the entire movie about superheroes and superpowered villains, that moment was like the biggest suspension of disbelief.
I'm like, absolutely not.
That man doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
That is purely for show. He has no fucking clue how that airplane works.
One of the other like surprise hits of the year was now I can't even remember the name. The Top Gun movie.
Oh,
do you want to talk?
Maverick?
Do you want to talk about this?
Because I mean, sure. Top Gun Maverick. We did. You went to see that with my family.
I did.
A week to the day after my dad died.
Yes.
Partially because my mom was like, yeah, I remember going to see the first one in the theaters with daddy. So that was like an interesting, I get why everybody loves it. It the movie had a thing to do, uh-huh. and it did the thing that it did, which was pew pew, boom boom.
That was
zoom
it.
Zoom.
Yes.
That was it. That was the project of the movie. But also, you know, the theme, my theme of 2022 is cried in a movie theater.
Yes.
This literally like every movie I saw past that point, just a lot of crying. Mm-hmm. So that one was a lot of my dad would have loved this movie crying. So that was really, I don't, just like anytime like the audience laughed, it was like, shh, my dad would have loved this.
I guess that was a little bit what I was curious about, like how, one, how it lives in your memory, or two, if it does, because if we've learned anything, it's like the grief erasing thing.
Yeah,
so.
yeah. Not, it definitely not erasing thing. I think that movie, I actually have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this movie, mostly around the way in which this movie had a very specific sort of project, and like the, I don't know, Rotten Tomatoes, the way that Rotten Tomatoes has like destroyed people's media literacy, and that like you can see a movie like I get why that movie has like 98% or whatever on Rotten Tomatoes, but to say that that movie is better than, I don't know, some number of movies that got like that have like 60-70 what, like something that is more divisive, mm-hmm. because it is doing something, mm-hmm. and saying something, mm-hmm. and that therefore makes it divisive, like I don't know, I like Top Gun had a very limited and narrow objective, which it met,
mm-hmm.
it is little U.S. military propaganda movie.
Yes.
And it did that, and, you know, whatever. Yeah. Sure. I don't know.
I think the reason that, for me, it was, like, a surprise hit is because I hated the original Top Gun. I don't know how spicy of a take that is. But we watched it together, I think, for Snark Squad.
It was a Snarkathon, but I missed that one.
Yes. And so I watched it and I was like, what the hell is this? And I really have then since harbored a lot of hate towards Top Gun. So I went.
Sure.
I mean, I went to go watch it with you guys, and I was like, yeah, let's go watch a movie. So I wasn't gonna say no, but I was in no way interested in watching.
I'm just here to sit with you guys and be sad, I guess. So if you want to go be sad at a movie theater, I guess I'll join you.
Who am I to say no? Let's go. And then I sat there and I was like, oh, like, I had a pleasant time. Especially because, yes, the like assignment was a very simple one, and it did the thing. And so,
yes.
Surprised.
Great work.
Surprise hit.
Two other honorable mentions for favorites of the year. A hot take, Persuasion.
Okay.
I fucking love that
movie. Okay, I was going to ask you. Okay, that was on my list to ask you.
Fucking love that movie.
Okay.
Haters can suck it. I don't care. I thought it was fun.
I thought it was so fun. And honestly, this is one of, this is probably under the Alex Astor thing, like maybe in that two or three spot of my, oh no, hold on. The Johnny Depp trial, Alex Astor, and then this of like the most terrible discourse that I participated in this.
The year. Johnny Depp, the Depp trial was like so terrible that like that's like another chart, yes. Right?
It doesn't feel fair. That's like leagues ahead. And then
that's the like we're all doomed discourse, and then there's like petty grievances discourse, right? Which be Alex Astor, then Persuasion.
Yes.
Yeah.
I freaking hated every moment of this. Okay, Persuasion and Everything Everywhere All at Once share something in common for me, and that is that every negative review that I saw of either of these things just made me livid. There's nothing that anybody has said like against either of these things that I'm like, oh, you have a valid point. It's all stuff that I'm like, I honestly just, ew. It's giving me the ick, and also I don't like it, and I don't want to hear it. The amount of people,
I don't want you to talk anymore.
Please stop. The amount of people who were just mad at Persuasion because it wasn't like the book.
Yes.
And like it just, it drove me up a wall.
Absolutely maddening. I mean, listen, I have said, will say again, I think that there is a fair statement to be made, which is that like visually and tonally, Persuasion 2022 and Pride and Prejudice 2005 should be flipped. Like that's like that's an argument like that that like in like a perfect world that you take like all of the production and like writing and like whatever, all of those choices and flip them, you have something in both that is truer to the book in both cases.
Yes.
However, that being said, I don't care. Yeah. Like I love like I it is such a lazy grievance.
Yes.
Like to me, if your sole critique of a thing is that it is not another thing, I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care. Like that's, I'm not interested in your thoughts at that point.
This is not to say that Persuasion doesn't have like some weaknesses or whatnot. There's some times that the humor didn't land for me.
Yeah.
It is like there were times that I had to pause and like walk away because the secondhand embarrassment reached a level that was like, I need a moment sort of thing.
But Anne Elliot is like create like that is canonical. Like that actually is like that is that character.
Yes.
Like the whole situation, her. Like, this is embarrassing. This is fucking embarrassing.
Yes.
She rejected this man, and now he comes back in, and he's hot shit, and she's a, like, spinster age or whatever. Like, that it's embarrassing.
Yes.
It's embarrassing.
It's not to say that there are not critiques of this. Most of them that I saw, just very, like, this isn't the book. I don't want to say this and be like, you know, everything is misogyny, but a lot of the critiques about, like, it's, like, Instagram culture or it's, like, millennial culture. So it just felt like it was, I don't know, internalized misogyny, women will like it. Like, what are you even saying
it's,
here?
It's giving pumpkin spice latte.
What is the critique here? I don't understand.
Explain that to me like I'm five. Yes. Like, I'm not sure I'm following what the issue is here.
Break it down. And then on the other hand, it was a lot of critique that I was like, did we read the same Persuasion? So people being like, well, Persuasion is not funny. It's written by Jane Austen.
Jane Austen's got jokes. Jane Austen's always got jokes.
I don't understand. Or like, oh, Anne Elliot is our, like, people really take her as, like, their introverted queen. And there is something about Anne that is a little bit more reserved or whatnot. But the entire thing is that people put that on her. She doesn't want to dance. She doesn't want to be out in society. That's not something she accepts for herself. It is, like, the place that she has been relegated to because she is unmarried. So people being like, oh, Anne is this way, when the whole thing is that Anne is sad and like Anne wants to be living more life than she actually is. For people to be like, no, this movie is wrong because Anne is introverted, it just sent me up a wall.
Anybody who has ever been like one type of person in their family circle, but like their friends have known them as another, like that, like that's what this is, except that in her world and in her circumstance, she doesn't get to leave her family orbit. Like she she had to be in her family orbit that entire time, so she only ever got to be like that projection of her and not the version of her that she so much to say about Persuasion. That's like my one other movie honorable mention is for favorite movie of the year is Glass Onion, which was fantastic. I have nothing to add to the discourse. Everybody else has said it. Glass Onion's great. They're all right. And now we're going to talk about the TV shows that we watched in 2022. We don't really have great transitions. Our transitions are to tell you that we're transitioning. A transition is now happening. That's one of the things that was so great about Cooler Than Homework is that we had Stefan make us the music. So we didn't even have to bother.
No,
we
just insert the music.
They just insert the cue that says, that one's done now. We have ended this discussion and we shall now begin
a new one.
Much like movies, TV includes some stuff we did together. Yes. That's that also a prominent theme of your TV watching for 2022. We did actually a rapid fire review of our last binge when you came here in the fall.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
So if anyone wants to go, that's up on YouTube. Yes. If anybody wants to see our little 5-star, we just gave everything stars and didn't.
No elaboration.
No context, no explanation. So we watched, that was when we watched A League of Their Own. Mm-hmm. We also watched Sandman, which I loved. That one also lives like really, really strongly in my feelings too. It is one that I keep thinking about rewatching. I haven't yet, but it's getting a second season. So I for sure will rewatch it before the second season comes out because I don't know, man. I just had a good time.
I did too.
I just really enjoyed it. I understand why people wouldn't like it because the overall arc wasn't super linear. Mm-hmm. It kind of bounced all over the place a lot, and it like had a lot of these sort of like smaller episodic like story, but that is part of what I loved about it. Like I loved the sort of mystery of the week vibe. Speaking of which, I also rewatched the first season of Veronica Mars.
I did as well.
Yeah, because I was messaging you out through it. You were like, yeah, me too. That was one of the first things that I did after like everybody left. So like my dad died, everybody was here, and then like I was with my mom for a really long time. Like we went to LA, she and I came back here, and then we went out to DC, and then she had a work trip to Florida. Just sort of like following my mom around the country. And then August, I finally came home and was like home and by myself for the first time in like 3 months. And one of the first things I did was start a Veronica Mars rewatch. I must have been like halfway into the rewatch before it dawned on me. I watched that show a couple times a year in college. That was my like depression hobby. Mm-hmm. Like I would rewatch and I would sink into my little depression hole. And I just had this moment where I was watching it and I was like, oh, huh.
Checks out.
Yeah. This math surely is mathing. Mm-hmm. It was the first big departure though from my other rule up to that point, which was that I had been seeking out bad dads. Was really a big fan of any movie, TV show, book, whatever give me all your worst fictional dads. Mm-hmm. There's no like not twisted way to phrase it other than just like, well, that is one grief I will never have to know. That's it. It's like bizarrely comforting to me to know, ooh, sure would suck to have a bad dad. Couldn't be me. So that was a fun hobby of mine for a couple months there. But then I did.
You watched The Best Dad.
The Best Dad. But here's the thing. He's the best dad. But also, I had a lot of thoughts on this rewatch about Keith Mars v. Sandy Cohen. And this is a long time Snark Squad. If you OG. Read the blog, yeah. this is some deep cut stuff. But because we recapped the OC and we talked about the OC long before we started working Veronica Mars into the blog, we had this thing where Sandy Cohen was our like metric. Yes. He was like our benchmark for good parenting. Yes. We would give out Sandy Cohen eyebrows. That's we would say classic. Sandy Cohen eyebrows for non-negligent parenting was an award that we would give, you know, the one time a season that one of the Pretty Little Liars parents did something useful, we would give them a Sandy Cohen eyebrow,
or basically. Like half an eyebrow.
Yeah, Pretty Little Liars parents very rarely got like a whole set of eyebrows. let's be real here, that was like our mark. And then once we started working Veronica Mars, like this was the thing that came up, was this idea of like Keith Mars versus Sandy Cohen. And like the thing is actually that there is no comparing them, because a thing, I don't know if it's in Little Fires Everywhere, the book, or if it's only on the TV show. It's for sure on the TV show. There's an exchange with where Kerry Washington is telling Reese Witherspoon, I don't know their characters' names. Kerry Washington is telling Reese Witherspoon that she didn't make good choices. She had good choices. Mm. And like that is the epitome of like the Keith Mars. Like Keith Mars didn't have good choices. Like, and so Keith Mars makes more dubious parenting choices, yes, overall, yes, than Sandy Cohen does,
yes,
because he has worse choices.
Right. The dad in the like two parent household, and the whole thing is that these are like rich people versus, yes, like Keith Mars single parenting after being abandoned, and like, uh-huh, you know, they're just like, you can't really compare.
Yes, you know, being looked down on in their community, yes, whereas the Coens ousted are like upstanding members of their community, you know, yes, et cetera, et cetera. There are just so many layers of like, it is one thing to talk about the choices that you make, but like it is a like bigger and more interesting conversation to talk about the choices that you are actually given, yes, to make, which also goes back to the whole Alex Astor thing.
I don't also have a good transition for this, but there were two other TV shows that I watched when I was with you, and you know, really enjoyed both of them. One is a tragedy because Paper Girls on Amazon was, yeah, canceled. So like that, I really, that makes me sad. It was really good. It was like really, really good. And it was like one where I was like very interested to see where the plot, it was like a mystery. So I wanted to know what the heck was going on. So, you know, we just got left there. And that sucked.
It's homophobic. Incredibly homophobic.
And then maybe the connection here is like good parents or family. But Miss Marvel also was like so sweet, so good. Such a good adaptation from a graphic novel and from a comic series. So really loved that one as well.
Yes.
I don't know that we will have much to say, but I just want to point out something that is very, I think, glaringly or obviously missing from both of our lists. I didn't watch House of the Dragon. I don't think you did either.
I watched like half of it. Mm-hmm. So we watched the beginning together. I think we watched pilot. Two episodes.
Yeah,
or two. Yeah. Or just the pilot. Yeah, one or two, I don't remember. I kept going for a couple episodes. The thing about House of the Dragon is that it has a project, an assignment that is could not be less for me. Mm. Like, we know how this ends. Mm-hmm. Like, the Targaryens lose everything. Mm-hmm. Their little dynasty falls because of themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, they are undone from within. Mm-hmm. They themselves are so fucking messy and selfish and terrible that they cannot maintain the thing that they have built. And so like a show that's just about terrible people being terrible, I think there's something interesting there. I also just don't want to watch it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to see it. Like, I hear you. That's like a cool story, bro. I don't want it. It makes me so unhappy. And then on top of that, the fact that the show is just like so much fucking incest. Yes. And like trying to watch the show, I had to just start like muting. And like, I would, any video that came across my feed that was about this show, like, I had to just make it go away, because there was no way for me to like enjoy this show while also being surrounded by incest shipping.
Yes.
Like, everything about it was just, it just made me so fucking uncomfortable. And like, I don't know, man. Listen, if you're loving the Dragon Show, good for you. I'm so happy for you. You can have that.
Yeah. That one's for you.
It was not for me.
Yep.
That one's for you.
Everything that you just said, except for I quit after the pilot, or however many that we watched at your house, because going into this, my whole, when they announced it, I was like, this is so supremely not for me, because yes. I hate the Targaryens. it's going to be a bunch of incest. And like, there was nothing about that I was like, oh, cool, I'm interested. And it took like the first two episodes to be like, everything that I feared that this would be, it is. Like, maybe it gets better. Maybe there's some, the performances, you know, the costumes, like the... I immediately made like a reaction to those first two episodes, just like not thinking about it on TikTok. So I was getting House of the Dragon content. So just being like in the moment, in the discourse, and seeing that so quickly, and from the time where she, the like, you know, the episodes that we had seen, the main character is a child. And even then, shipping the incest and stuff, I was so uncomfortable with all of it. I just, not even for the dragons. I gotta go. Some part of me keeps thinking I will binge it and I will finish it just so I can let others know how much I didn't like it. But even that hasn't really like inspired me enough to go and finish it. So even though, you know, this podcast, our blog or whatnot, has dedicated hours and hours and hours and hours to picking apart everything in this universe. Maybe this is the one that breaks me. Maybe this is the line that I say, no,
this is where they finally, you finally get to walk away and know some peace. It's just, every time I think about it, I get so mad at the fact that this is the story they of all the stories you could tell in this universe. Why? This one,
but
like,
I mean people are gobbling it up.
Like, but they would have gobbled up anything. They could have fucking given them.
Yeah,
like the pilot that got canned, I'm still so upset. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, the end of the season 8 bombed, but it wasn't because people don't want this.
Yes,
this, like, this universe don't want these stories. They just
yes,
very upsetting. If you want to, if you want dragons, give us old Valyria. Yeah. Like, if you really want to do dragons, like, that to me is also just way more interesting, because like, you just find some like strong showrunners and like let them play in the sandbox. Understandably, because of the way in which Game of Thrones ended, I understand why people with money are nervous about the idea. Like, I get it. I hear that. But I also think so much of what has made like the larger MCU successful is that it is like a big sandbox that everybody is playing in. I think this would be even better, because the problem with the MCU sandbox is that you can't make material changes in the sandbox. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the biggest problems with the flip side. So like, it's working well because it is a little sandbox that you keep inviting somebody new in, like, to come like play in the sandbox. But everybody has a mandate to like only leave one thing behind. Like, you have to like clean the sandbox up after yourself. Mm-hmm. You can only leave like one thing in there for the next person, but everything else you got to like make sure that you move it out of the way. So like a smaller universe, right? So if you just say like, go fuck around in old Valyria and all that matters, and it all gets destroyed, like, it's a self-immolating sandbox. Mm-hmm. In that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all lost, so you don't have that problem. Just like, far more potential. I think that would be far more interesting. Call me, HBO.
You walk in the room and you're like, scrap the Targaryens. Love it. In our 2021 year in review, we ended with like a plug for Spotify to sponsor us. and this year, we're ending with Call us, HBO.
We also said we publish 8 to 10 episodes a year. So call us, HBO. We publish 2 to 3 episodes per year.
Boom.
And on that note, that brings us to the end of our first podcast episode of 2023. Woo! Stick around and see if any more happen. Thank you so much for listening. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at StarkSquad.com if you want to share your best and worst of the year or come at us for our hot takes, whatever. You can go leave a comment on that post, or you can find us on Twitter at Snark_Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
This show is a Snark Squad production edited by me, and the music is by Stefan Chin.